This is Scott Becker with the Becker's Business Podcast. I'm thrilled today to be joined by John Newhard. John is the CEO, Chief Executive Officer of Clink. Clink is based in Ann Arbor. He's going to tell us about Clink, how it got its name, and a lot more. John, can you take a moment to introduce yourself?
Sure. You nailed it. I'm John Newhard. I'm the CEO of Clink, and Clink is the leader in conversational AI, or AI obviously for artificial intelligence. And we're headquartered in beautiful Ann Arbor, Michigan.
And how did you end up at Clink? And tell us a little bit more about conversational intelligence. What exactly you guys do?
So if you think about like Siri or Alexa, you know, it's great if you say, hey, go play, you know, Creedence Clearwater Revival, right? So you'll get, you know, Born in the Bayou will come out of the speaker. Everything will be great. But it's very much like that's a very, you know, kind of basic conversational experience interface between, you know, voice is the interface between a human and technology. Clink is basically that on steroids. So if you're, say, for instance, if you have U.S. Bank as your main bank, you can go into their digital app, which is powered by Clink, and say, hey, I really want to go Zelle $50 to Scott tomorrow. Do I have $50 in my account? And they'll say, yes, you've got, you know, $2,122 in your account. And you're set up to go Zelle Scott $50 tomorrow. Do you want to proceed? Yes, go. So you can go ahead and talk to technology the way that you talk to other human beings, the way that we're speaking today. The tech understands you and we can go ahead and make that actionable. So if you think about, you know, kind of where the future is going, voice being a major interface in the technology, Clink has extremely powerful tool in that regard.
Fantastic. And how is the business going? Where are you guys at on this? Who are the customers? Who buys from Clink?
So right now we've actually focused on this. The technology we have is broadly applicable. We've made a decision to focus on financial services, which really for the moment means large retail banks. So we've got some large banks on three different continents and multiple languages using this for tens of millions of end customers. But our goal is to, you know, eventually get this into other verticals and hopefully have this be just a better way of interfacing with technology. So if you think of where we are and where we're going, I'd categorize this as very much the early stages of that journey.
No, magnificent. And when you see this sort of emerge into different systems, one of the things that's fascinating to me is when you look at big companies, big banks, big anything, how different they are and how good their systems work together and are interoperable, to use one choice words, but how well some of them connect. And then you work with different systems, different companies, and how poorly they connect. And I take it you're working more with a little bit more advanced systems that are a little bit ahead of the technology game than early adopters.
Yeah, that's a fair point. I think it's the point you made. I think the other piece of why banking is interesting, there's probably two others. One is, you know, banks don't really have physical products, right? So if I'm going to sell you $50, I'm just moving numbers around. It's literally ones and zeros going from, you know, the Newhard account to the Becker account, and all's right with the world. Like, we don't have to, no one's got to physically pick up money and move it from point A to point B. So that's super helpful from, you know, in that regard. So if you think about banks are effectively, you know, a brand, a bunch of customers, and a tech stack at core. I'm oversimplifying a little bit. There's our regulatory stuff and things like that, but
sure,
that's a core part of a bank. Yep. And then the other thing is like, frankly, with COVID, I mean, COVID's been weird for everyone, and this sounds like a perverse thing to say, but I think, you know, all the things that were happening in banking, and this is a typical tech trend for 2020, have just been accelerated due to COVID. So I live in Michigan. Our branches have been closed for the last 9 months, right? I have no, I either can do digital banking or I can call a call center. Those are my options, right? Like, the ATMs still work. That's great. But as a result of all that, and that's obviously, you know, something that's happened globally, banks have no choice but to accelerate all the things that they're going to do technology-wise, and that's been an accelerant of Clink's growth.
100%. So tell us a little bit more. You're a West Point guy, a Harvard Business School graduate. Talk a little bit about your background. What was West Point like? You know, what was Harvard Business School like? Just talk to us just a little bit about those.
Thanks. I noticed that you're a Harvard Law guy, so we have some intersection there, admittedly, in different sides of the river.
The Harvard Law folks were generally far more analytical. The Harvard Business School guys were far better talkers and marketers. And then on top of it, had to listen to Michael Porter and stuff like that. And then the West Point guys were much stronger and fiercer than all of us. So it doesn't even, not even a comparison by any kind of account of thing. But tell us a little bit about Harvard Business School. I mean, magnificent place and fascinating. Are you a Michael Porter fan or not a Michael Porter fan? Is he just a great marketer? Is he actually brilliant? Any quick take on that?
Yeah, so I had a phenomenal experience at business school, HBS. I'm a big Porter fan. I think, like, for me, the interesting thing about Porter is just kind of like, I'm going to apply a business framework and business analytical framework to other problems. So he's got this big thing right now with, you know, kind of analyzing how American politics works. Not surprisingly, he suggests it's broke. That's not hard to figure out. But he has some really interesting ways of, like, applying, you know, his five forces, for instance, to politics and just saying, you know, there's just not enough competition. There's not enough disruption. It's, you know, politicians choosing their voters as opposed to voters choosing their politicians. And, I don't want to take that thread too far with the risk of offending anyone or whatever. But just interesting what he's done.
But it is a fascinating mind because he's been able to surf to different industries over time and apply his thinking to them in a really intelligent way.
No, absolutely. And it's funny too, because it's coming into new opportunities, I use the five forces to go, how viable is this thing? Like, what are the things you need to worry about? Right. It's just a great framework, great analytical crutch to fall back on of, like, you know, am I as a CEO focusing on the right things? Right. I think that's massively important. Right. In tech, you know, there's a couple other great frameworks. Why am I blanking on the crossing the chasm guy? But I use that framework all the time of, like, where are we? What should we be doing? What are the right things to be focusing on? And same thing with the five forces. The five forces are just a great way to analyze anything, or just as a starting point, right?
Fascinating. Yes. And talk about the military academy, West Point. What was that like? I've got a close friend, Bob Serens, who's a West Point guy, had a magnificent experience, fascinating. By the time he was done with his 5 years afterwards, he was ready to be done, but a magnificent experience. Talk about West Point.
No, I had a very similar experience. It's interesting too. Like, I think the, as a place to develop yourself as a leader, I can't think of a better place on planet Earth. I say that with, obviously, like, having gone through it and pride of place or whatever, but even being a middle-aged guy and reflecting on the experience, you know, just the, you know, push yourself, dig, you know, dig, see, you know, see what you have at core, you know, having other people's back at all times, you know, just, you know, the core friends that I've made, the set of values that I have, just, West Point's environment is really designed that, like, if you wake me up at 3 a.m. or wake any graduate up at 3 a.m, they're going to default into becoming good leaders because they practice it so much. You just naturally reflexively go back to, you know, what are we trying to accomplish? What's the best way to get there? Always making sure that you take care of others, right? It's definitely like leadership is service. That's a really powerful thing. I'm in awe of the experience, even as a middle-aged dude.
Fascinating. Now, you don't have to say middle-aged because you and I are of the same age, really, range. and when you speak to, like, make the cross reference to CCR and to Bob Newhart, you don't have to say it. We're there. We're okay. Those are a couple of the Creedence Clearwater rival. I mean, we know we're in the same age range, and it is what it is. To talk for a moment, 2 seconds on advice to leaders. What advice do you give to emerging leaders?
Maybe a few things. The first of which is, take care. Think of others first. No one wants to follow anyone who's going to think of themselves first. And it's such an intuitive thing. And it's just a matter. And again, I think it's a matter of habit. Like, this, I go back to the West Point thing I think West Pointers or military leaders in general think that way. Right. You're always taking care of your troops. Like, you always have to take care of others. And I think that's an important thing to think through. And there's a corollary to that, which is, you know, more on the business side, which is build great teams, right? And again, I'll do the middle age reference thing. I apologize, but I always think like I always take a little chuckle at like Ringo Starr. I mean, he's sort of the test case. Like he wasn't even the best drummer. He probably wasn't even the best drummer in the Beatles, but he surrounded himself with great people. You know what I mean? Like we don't have to be to that level of like, hey, you found a Paul, a George, and a John. But you know, the easiest way to be successful in business is find great people to surround yourself with, create great teams and great cultures, and you know the rest starts to take care of itself pretty quick, right? It's the getting the right people on the bus and then figure out what direction you go, right?
No, it's a magnificent point. It's a great both James Collins point, and then also the Ringo Starr point's a magnificent point because quite frankly, might not have been the most talented, but quite talented, but was probably the most likable and the easiest to be part of a team. And so that probably itself, the glue between a McCartney and a John Lennon and so forth, was probably just a critical skill set. And you hit it really in an interesting way. Anyways, John, it is a pleasure to visit with you on the Becker Business Podcast. A brilliant career. We wish you great luck with Clink. We've got, you know, one kid who lives in Ann Arbor, and so we think it's a magnificent town. We hope that you love it there, and just a magnificent career you've had, and continued luck here. Just magnificent. Thank you, John.
Hey, Scott, pleasure is mine. Thank you, sir.